from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll take a look at a new book celebrating Indiana plein air painting.
I'll find out about a new documentary film about gender being shown at the Idlejord.
And I'll get a preview of the Actors Theater of Indiana's new season. Plus, there'll be our arts counter we call.
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indiana Plein Air Painters Association, or IPAPA, and Indiana Landmarks have come out with a new book that features paintings of Indiana landmarks by Hoosier artists. The title is Painting Indiana 3, Heritage of Place. Travis DiNicola spoke with Bill Whistle, the project coordinator for the book, and with artist Chris Newland.
Chris, Bill, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thank you.
This is a gorgeous book, and I'm really curious to find out how this project came about, of course, with Landmarks and IPAPA and the IU Press. But Chris, actually what I want to do is I want to start with you. Because as I was looking through the book, and I know you're from Columbus, but one of the pieces that you have in here, it's Monument Circle. And it's, I mean, such a landmark that so many of us know. Tell me a bit about this painting, when you were working on it, why you selected this, how it ended up in the book.
Well, actually, that was painted at one of our organized paintouts that we had at the Easley Winery, and people just went out and painted downtown. Mm-hmm. It was done very early on in the 18-month period that we were allowed to paint for the book. And I've held on to it all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Monument Circle anyway. It's just a beautiful, fun place to be. So I wanted to have that represented as one of the, it's kind of the heart of the city.
It is.
And yeah. So many wonderful events have taken place there, and it's dear to the hearts of all the people from Indianapolis. So I was hoping it would get in, and it
mm-hmm.
did.
And it's it's a beautiful painting of the circle. It looks like it's maybe late spring or early summer, or
I think it was
trees are starting to bloom a bit.
And August.
August. Well, there we go.
It was a very hot day.
Was it?
I remember that very much.
So tell me about this process. There was an 18-month period where artists, plein air painters, were invited to paint for this book. Is that how this worked, Bill?
Well, IPAPA has about 300 members,
mm-hmm.
and we have, I like to jokingly say, we have very stringent requirements because if you have a check for $35, you're in. So our artists, this was completely open.
Mm-hmm.
Any artist could paint as many paintings that they'd like.
Okay.
We ended up with 75 artists who submitted about 350 paintings.
Wow.
And we had the editor of Plein Air Magazine, Steve Doherty from mm-hmm. New York, come in and make the selection of the 100 paintings for the book.
And all of these are, again, Indiana landmarks. I mean, defined in different ways, of course.
But oh, absolutely. Now, see what what was required for the artists is that they had to give us some proof that it was painted plein air, mm-hmm. out in the open. So they had to take a photograph of themselves painting on site. And then with each painting that they submitted, they had to give us about a 50-word artist statement, which was incorporated into the book, mm-hmm. where they researched and tried to put together the historical significance of what the scene was that they were trying to paint. So there were some very well-known landmarks like Monument Circle or the mm-hmm. Washington Street Bridge or the
Capitol Building.
And other famous buildings throughout the state. But then there were landscapes. There's a cityscape of an alleyway in Indianapolis, one that's mm-hmm. in Bloomington that I know is dear to a number of people. And then there were some fields and cemeteries. It was up to the artists for them to make the connection.
You know, I must say, I mean, looking at one by C.W. Mundy of the Broad Ripple Canal, I've never seen the canal look quite as beautiful as it did. I didn't even quite recognize it from the painting, but once you realize what it is, you can certainly see the inspiration. It's very interesting. I mean, and even though all the work is done by plein air painters, so it is all done outside, of course, many, many different styles are exhibited here. I mean, there's some that are much more impressionist, some less so, and quite a broad spectrum, it would seem.
I agree.
Absolutely. Two painters can be standing side by side mm-hmm. looking at the same thing and painting away. You compare the two and it's apples to oranges. It's something so totally different.
So Chris, other than your own work, what are some of your favorites? Can you share with us from ones that are in this book mm-hmm. or ones that you think are really interesting and worth paying attention to? Or
well, I admire some of the things that I can't do, like mm-hmm. watercolors. I think that the water. Some of my favorite ones were ones that didn't make it into the book, too. I mean, we had a show of the paintings that didn't make it into the book, and they were almost as good as those that did because mm-hmm. people had saved some of their very best work for them. But I especially like Rena Brower's take on. She has a different, very loose style. Mm-hmm. Some of them are very tight. I like the paintings of the Irwin Garden because that's a little jewel in Columbus that not too many people get to see. But we had sure. a paint out there, and several of those made it into the book. So I think that was nice to have Columbus represented and the Columbus Courthouse also.
Now, were all the paintouts organized specifically for this book, or at times did artists go out just on their own as well?
No, I went. Well, we did have one up at the dunes, but mm-hmm. I went all the way to the dunes and over to Brookville, as far south as the Ohio River and over to Turkey Run State Park. So it was just all over the state, mm-hmm. and you could do as much or as little as you wanted. But we did try to organize some paintouts that would encourage people to get out.
Because it is somewhat social, and plein air painters are a social group.
Well, yeah, that's you know, it's kind of interesting because as a group, sometimes being an artist, if you're a studio mm-hmm. worker, it's very, very solitary and, you know, sometimes very introspective. And but yet we're a very sharing and caring group that help each other. We always enjoy it when we have younger artists who like to join or new people who want to learn. There's a pretty strong mentoring program that goes on where mm-hmm. people who are inexperienced and wanting to learn, they can just kind of tag along and get free critiques, criticism, help, assistance as they're growing.
Of course, the nature of plein air painting, too, you kind of have to be social at times. I know that, you know, people are walking by, of course. I mean, you're in public places, and people are always curious, right? You know, what are you painting? What are you doing this for? I mean, that's sort of part of the life, right?
Oh, absolutely. Usually they come up and say, I have an aunt who painted. Or, what are you painting? Mm-hmm. But it is fun to share what you do. It's such an unusual thing that it draws people to you, and they love to watch, especially the children. Mm-hmm. It's fun to share with them how you mix the colors and how you're trying to capture a moment in time and share it with people. It's in the future.
It really is. It's just such a lovely collection. I mean, the work that's in here, I mean, other great landmarks that are included, West Baden, the canal at Metamora, you mentioned the dunes. I mean, such a great variety. How did this come about in terms of IPAPA working with Indiana Landmarks?
Well, the germ of the book was really kind of planted in a meeting that started back in 2009 when mm-hmm. IPAPA was really just kind of figuring out what to do next. We had done two books that were both very successful. We're very fortunate that we have a board member who's also a member of the board of Indiana Landmarks, Richard McKnight. Mm-hmm. And he kind of proposed the germ of this idea. We then Marianne Davis, who's a very important member, and Rachel Perry, who is also a member of IPAPA, but just recently retired as chief curator of the Indiana State Museum, took the proposal to IU Press, mm-hmm. and you know, we agreed upon the program or the book with him. We then had a meeting with the board, Marsh Davis, Andra Walters, at Indiana Landmark,
sure,
and proposed the idea to them, and they thought that that was really great, and mm-hmm. it's really worked out very, very well, because the 9 regional offices that Landmarks has, mm-hmm. They suggested places for us to paint.
Oh, great!
And you know, we organized some specific paintouts, but I would say that a good third, a quarter to a third of the book is really paintings that artists decided on their own just to go and paint. So we have the Frank Lloyd Wright House in Lafayette, or we have, I think, a public library up in northeastern Indiana around mm-hmm. the Fort Wayne area, things like that. A good percentage of the books, paintings in the book, came from scheduled paintouts, or mm-hmm. yeah, but a good percentage are not.
Now, in addition to this beautiful book, there's actually going to be an exhibit now, which I know you're still just working on all of that, but it's going to be at Indiana Landmarks. My co-host Sharon Gamble was just telling me about that. What can you share with us about that?
Well, this is really exciting. We are going to actually be exhibiting all 100 paintings mm-hmm. that are in the book, and it's going to start at Indiana Landmarks on September 20th, and it will be up that night and on the first Friday in October, mm-hmm. And the exhibition will be up for the National Historic Trust Convention that will be there at the end of October, 1st of November.
Oh, that's excellent.
Then it's going to travel the state. Mm-hmm. In December through March, it will be in Lafayette at the Lafayette Museum of Art. March through May will be at the Fort Wayne Museum of Art. May and June, it will be at the Richmond Art Museum. June and July will be at the Evansville Museum of Art, Science, and History. And then it will finish the exhibition tour at the Minnetrista Cultural Center in Muncie, Indiana.
Wow.
Now, the other interesting thing.
That's fantastic.
Thing,
to have that many exhibition sites be showing this, that's really wonderful.
Part of our mission is education.
Yes.
So we wanted to get it out there for people to see and enjoy and learn from. Mm-hmm.
And I might want to add here that although we definitely want all your listeners to buy a book, we'd also like for them to come to the exhibition and buy a painting, because
absolutely.
They'll be offered
now, they won't
sale.
Get it delivered until after the whole thing's
correct.
Over, but
that's
still.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. But they are the artists, when they turned in their paintings, mm-hmm. Priced them. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be offered for sale, and they'll be offered for sale for the first time on
that's
September 20th.
That's
so
great.
We're hoping it's kind of like Macy's on the day after Thanksgiving.
Well, very good. Very good. Well, again, congratulations on such a exciting project and a beautiful book, and what I know will be a absolutely stunning exhibition. Great work. So, Bill, Chris, thank you both very much for coming in to Art of the Matter today. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Bill Whistle, Chris Brower from the Indiana Plein Air Painters Association. The new book featuring paintings of Indiana landmarks by Hoosier artists, Painting Indiana 3, Heritage of Place, has just been released by IPAPA, Indiana Landmarks, and IU Press, with text by Rachel Berenson Perry. The exhibit debuts at Indiana Landmarks Center on Friday, September 20th. And you can get more information at iupress.indiana.edu or indianalandmarks.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
2 Spirits is a documentary film that tells the story of the hate crime murder of a 16-year-old transgender Navajo boy and explores the ancient Native American Two-Spirit tradition. It will be screened at 12:30 p.m. Saturday, September 28th, at the Idle Jorg Museum of American Indians and Western Arts. This award-winning film interweaves the tragic death of a young boy with a revealing look at a time when many Native American cultures reserve places of honor for people who defy gender norms. Sharon Gamble invited the film's director, Lydia Nibley, to tell us more.
So I love this two-spirit concept. The Navajo word is, help me, is it Nadle?
Nadle. Yeah.
And I've read that there are more than 130 Native American peoples in the United States and Canada who have something similar to this concept.
That's true. Not all North American tribes have a concept of differing gender or sexual expression, but most do. And then the problem became, so how do we talk about this when all of these tribes have slightly different ways of holding this tradition and describing it, and different words, obviously, because there are very distinct native languages.
Right.
So they just rolled up that term, two-spirit, as a kind of holding space for, we need some phrase in English that will be approximate.
Aha. Uh-huh. And that phrase is actually fairly recently invented, like 1990, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And it doesn't translate back, so you don't take that term and put it back into another native language, because it can end up meaning something odd, like two ghosts or something.
Oh, okay.
So what it really is just, I know this is a sophisticated conversation, but your viewers, I mean your listeners, are very sophisticated.
True.
So it's just really a juicy thing to think about gender and sexual expression across a spectrum, and drop the binary, simplistic idea of gender, even for a moment, to just think of many other peoples around the world have had an understanding of people as they come into the world quite naturally, which is often across the spectrum.
And two-spirit can be a person born into a body that looks male or a body that looks female, but with pull toward characteristics of the other. That's not a very scientific description, I guess. Help me out here.
But you know what? In some ways, it is a combination of science and art and just the way the human spirit and the human psyche work. So, science has a range of gender from intersex, which is pretty common, to true what used to be called hermaphrodism, which is statistically rare. But then the brain chemistry, the brain structure, and the heart and soul of people is much more nuanced than just clear little boxes for masculine, feminine.
And we think it's, culturally, a lot of cultures have tried to make it seem so easy. You check one of two boxes.
Mm-hmm. That ends up being quite brutal for a lot of people who don't fit within those boxes, and they can spend a lifetime in a lot of pain dealing with a society that doesn't see the nuance that is actually there.
So in some of the Native American cultures, and I gather to some extent in the Navajo culture, being two-spirit is a gift, and it sometimes confers its own characteristics, such as some two-spirited people are healers or prophets, right?
Yes, medicine people, often seen as having special insight about counseling couples or matchmaking. The idea that people who can see from multiple perspectives have gifts to give is really so gentle and so smart. And we see it in the way things play out, with the way some people describe being artists or healers, with a different appreciation of masculine and feminine and a mix of gender. But when people really elevate it, that's a nice shift from what we've talked about, which is acceptance or tolerance. In this culture, it's taken a long time to have LGBT people in a position of being, quote, accepted or, quote, tolerated. Both are very condescending, kind of superior, hetero-superior words for those people, right?
Absolutely.
And yet, when we look at the gifts that are available with being two-spirit, it's a really profound shift. One of the stories that I love that didn't make it into the film, because there's a different one that adds a different dimension to the film. But one that a story that I really love is about a young man who comes out to his family, and they've become so westernized, and their views have been have shifted from traditional views, so that they do what is typical in many families and basically throw him out, and he's rejected, and it's a horrible situation. Mm. When he comes out to his traditional native grandmother at her kitchen table, she smiles at him and she says, "Oh, my friends will be so jealous."
Oh, wow.
So that's just a very different worldview, and one that I think we benefit from exploring.
So what attracted to you what caused you to want to make this documentary? Had you read about the story of Fred Martinez first, or had you been exploring the idea of Two-Spirit first?
It came very personally, in that there's a man in the film, John Peters Campbell, who's a friend of the Martinez family. And he was a friend of mine. And in Cortez, Colorado, when he shared what was going on in this town in the aftermath of Fred's murder, it was very emotional and very personal to hear a friend going through this. He is an activist, and he wanted to make sure that a group of them could do something that contributed, and that maybe what happened in Laramie, Wyoming, wouldn't happen in Cortez, Colorado a year later. That people would be in a meaningful dialogue, that the police would be sensitized and educated, that the local newspaper would cover it appropriately and sensitively. And so John and a group of people invited organizations like PFLAG and other major LGBT organizations to come in and provide assistance. And Kathy Renna, who is a really wonderful person who knows a lot about this work and was there in Laramie for the whole thing with Judy Shepard, she flew to Cortez to be a part of it, and she's in the film Two Spirits as well. And so I had that inside access through someone. But then the story became personal when I talked to Fred's mother, and she shared how difficult it was for her to see what was left of Fred's body and how insistent she was that she see him. And as a mother, I understood that I would want to be with whatever remained of my child.
Of course.
And that's what she did, and his father and his aunts and his brothers couldn't do that, but she did. She had the strength to do that. And as soon as I got that in her and she saw that I understood that, we had a connection. And she wanted his story told so that there would be a potential for a larger sort of change out of his life. And so my commitment to her was that we will tell this story, and we will do the very best we can to make sure that many people see it so that it can have an effect. So that's how I came to the story, was through that. But when I learned that the Navajo had four genders and that there were tribes that had seven or nine genders, as a garden variety heterosexual woman, white woman in America, I just found that so deeply moving and interesting, and it opened my mind as I started to look into it. And I knew that if we had a conversation in this culture that included more of that thinking, perhaps we could treat our LGBT brothers and sisters with more respect.
It also strikes me that it even LGBT probably doesn't encompass all the terms that acronym
right.
should, because
right.
because if you're two-spirited, it does not necessarily mean that you are, in the way we define it in this country, gay or lesbian.
Right. Isn't that something? I mean, isn't it great to get how diverse the human family is and to really understand that? You're absolutely right. It's LGB and T become narrow little boxes for people.
Mm-hmm. So what, in addition to screening this film as many places as you can, what is sort of the life path of this documentary? Where has it been so far, and what are your aspirations for it?
Well, screening in your esteemed institution is really a high point. That is a really exciting thing for the film team, and we're very grateful to be there. The film has also screened at the British Museum, which means a lot, too. It's a symbolic thing. It's screened at the White House, and being there and seeing the transformation of our culture in that way was really profound, to see a couple who had been together for a long time, a married couple of black men, embrace beneath an enormous portrait of George Washington inside the White House was one of the most beautiful things I think I'll ever see. So there have been moments, big kind of high point moments, but I think also times like screening it in a small audience and a mother whose two-spirit child was being bullied in school, not just by the students, but also by the principal and by teachers in, you know, subtle and not so subtle ways that the kids were picking up on and responding to. At a small screening, she told me and the group that was gathered there that she marched in with the DVD of Two Spirits and said to the principal, "You are watching this with me. It will take 1 hour of your time, and when it's over, there will be no more bullying in school."
Wow. Kudos to her, and if you could get that to happen in 1 out of every 10 schools, imagine the change.
Well, that's what we're trying to do right now. We're looking for the philanthropic support and for the, you know, for the vision of someone to help us place Two Spirits in more university settings, colleges, universities, and high schools. It's age appropriate for high school too. Right now, we've worked really hard to get it into almost 400 colleges and universities, which sounds like a lot on the one hand, but then when you look at the numbers of the tens of thousands of schools in the country, it feels like a drop in the bucket. And because the film is evergreen in terms of its content, it makes sense for us to work really hard to get it placed in more of the curriculum, because it does make a difference in how people see themselves, their own pride. It makes a difference in decreasing bullying, suicide prevention, just general cultural awareness. So we're right in the throes of looking for help to make that happen.
Sharon Gamble with film director Lydia Nibley. Two Spirits will be screened at 12:30 p.m. Saturday, September 28th at the Eideljorg. The film is part of the Eideljorg's Out West program series, created to illuminate positive contributions of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender communities to the history and culture of the American West. Learn more at eideljorg.org.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what this Saturday is?
Let's see. What could it be?
Indiana's
Nicest Day, which of course is Penrod.
The
out at the IMA.
Arts Fair at the IMA. It's the 40
blah, something or another.
In many, many decades,
and
there are many generations
out
of
out there
Penrod
alive
guys
for most of the day.
And you're going to be officiating a wedding,
I
right?
I am. It'll be the first time I've missed Penrod, I think, in 15 years.
Oh,
but I
man
am officiating a friend's wedding and looking forward to that very much.
Give me some money. I'll buy your art. Anyway, we'll tell you more about that and other great things going on our calendar we call
What'll
We Do?
That's right.
So 9 to 5, Penrod, Penrod Arts Fair.
That's what people be doing.
One of the best adjudicated art fairs in the country. Lots of wonderful visual artists and pretty much every arts organization, cultural or arts organization in the city is represented with a booth. So walk up and down and get your season schedules for those organizations whose mailing list you don't happen to already be on. And hey, I'm just guessing here, but I bet that booths would be happy to add you to their mailing list if you just
wants
to.
Oh,
and you're right, performances and of course
great,
food.
Great performances. I mean, there's a great dance stage and music throughout the whole day. Mm-hmm. And of course, Matt Sosi is going to be doing stuff there.
He's
right?
Going to do some blues,
jazz and blues
impresarioing, if there is such a verb. Mm-hmm. And of course, it is on the grounds of the Indianapolis Museum of Art. So be sure to stroll, go in the greenhouses,
and the museum is open.
And
that
the museum
day
is open, and just lots.
You can go out to 100 Acres.
You can go out to 100 Acres and check out
the exhibit of signs in 100 acres.
It's so cool. And every time you turn a corner,
you get deeper in the woods, and you're like, okay, there aren't any more exhibits. And you turn a corner, and there's more signs. They're really cool.
Some of my favorite ones are like, you know, blade of grass, or, you know, there, you know, a bird had landed here. Or
I kind of like the blank ones.
Yeah.
We better not say too much more because some of our listeners might not have seen him. Mm-hmm. Anyway, other things are going on. What do you got?
Other things are going on. Well, let's see. That's a fine question, Sharon. Hey, just want to remind people that at the Phoenix Theater, they have extended their run of the show Love, Loss, and What I Wore. That is running through the 15th of September. It's the play by Nora Ephron, and it's kind of a scrapbook series of pieces about women's clothes and what they wore and how it connects to different moments in their life, and just a lovely piece and worth checking out.
Men are allowed. There were 3 men in the audience when I was there. You might understand the women in your life a little bit better. I'm just saying. It's kind of like the vagina monologues back in the day. Hey, in the sense that it's mostly a show for women. So local writer Hugh Van Diver is going to do something really cool during National Banned Books Week, September 22nd through the 30th. He's going to live in a display of local artists' interpretations of the covers of banned or threatened books. Where's he going to do that? In the window of the Kurt Vonnegut Memorial Library, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I love that. He's going to live in there for a week. And you can find out more at VonnegutLibrary.org, but that's a really creative way to call attention to the fact that, you know, we sometimes think that censorship is a thing of the past. It's not at all. So check that out, as well as all sorts of other great programming at VonnegutLibrary.org.
Good luck to you, Hugh.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, coming up on Sunday, September 15th at the Athenaeum, Yatz Young Actors Theater is having their fantastical Lost in Oz. It's a family fundraising event from 2:30 to 5 p.m. on that Sunday afternoon. And they are encouraging people to come in a Wizard of Oz costume. You can win prizes. You can have your face painted at the Emerald City Beauty Shop. You can get a spray-on tattoo. You ready, Sharon? From the Winged Monkeys? You can try Glinda's Bubble Maker. Of course, there's experiments you can do with the Wizard's Mad Science area. You can go on a Yellow Brick Road scavenger hunt and a lot of other stuff, including a performance by No Exit Theater Group, who just had a great run at the Fringe. This is all very fun. It's, a fundraiser for Young Actors Theater, which is a great not-for-profit youth theater that works out of the Athenaeum. And so a very cool thing. So this should be a lot of fun, a great way to celebrate Wizard of Oz and Young Actors Theater. Did I mention the spray-on tattoos from the Winged Monkeys? It's next Sunday, the 15th.
That itself is worth the price of admission, I'm just saying. Hey, if you like home tours, wow, as the calendar turns and September is here, it's time for all those fall home tours. Here's one to put on your calendar. It's you still have a little bit of planning time, but on Saturday, September 28th, from 10 to 6, the Broad Ripple Historic Home Tour is coming up. Always a great time to learn about the Broad Ripple community, as well as the history of some dynamic and beautiful homes.
Cool. Hey, last thing I've got is, along with Penrod, on the 7th, it's also the Paint Out Day for Art versus Art, and that's taking place
versus art
from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. Artists will have 4 hours to paint when they come and register at the Garfield Park Art Center. They can paint inside or outside, but their work will then be part of the Art versus Art main event on Friday, September 27th, when the pieces go up against the Wheel of Death.
Well, I just because that sounded so harsh and dramatic, I need
there.
To end with something a little bit lighter here. How about a fairy princess tea? No flying monkeys with spray-on tattoos, but this is the party of the year for young ladies. Make your own crown. This is for daughters and adults, moms or dads, under the guidance of a famous New York City costume designer whose name is highly associated with Broadway. There will also be a special visit from a magical princess with a real crown, as well as tea. That's all coming up on September 21st from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., $25 a person. Where, you might ask?
Where?
Where can I get my fairy crown and make my fairy crown? The Propylaeum. Find out more online.
Very good, Sharon. We'll be back next week with more on
What'll We Do? Thank you.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The Actors Theater of Indiana brings professional local theater to the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. Travis DiNicola spoke with Kristen Merritt, Judy Fitzgerald, and Don Farrell to find out more.
Kristen, Judy, Don, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you guys here.
Travis, great being back.
Great to be here.
Absolutely.
Great to be here.
Thank you so much. And Kristen, welcome aboard. I know that you're still fairly new to the Actors Theater, so great to have you with us today.
Thanks so much.
Let's start with a brief one of those. So what's Actors Theater of Indiana for, you know, people who may not be as familiar with it? It's a really great theater.
It's an
a really
amazing
great
theater company.
Awesome talent.
Our home base is in Carmel, Indiana, at the Studio Theater at the Center for the Performing Arts. We moved here from New York City in 2005, started operations, and now we're based out of Carmel in the Studio Theater. We've finished our eighth season. We're going into our ninth season. We're really thrilled.
And we're the resident professional theater company at the entire Carmel City for the Performing Arts.
So. And that is an important point, professional theater.
Yes.
Professional and equity.
And equity.
Because we're an equity theater company operating under small professional theater.
Two key words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's a very cool thing. And that makes a big difference in terms of the quality of what you do and how you do the work that you do and the season that you present. And so it's great that you're able to have that relationship with the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel as well.
We're very, very blessed.
And I know that Carmel's been a great supporter of you guys.
They have. Both the mayor's office as well as the city council. One of the great things about Carmel and really central Indiana, too, the support for the arts. That's one of the reasons why we chose Indiana to locate. And the amazing support and belief in the power of the arts and how it can transform a community and it can actually be a cultural and economic builder for a community as well. I talk to mentors of mine in other states, and they're like, that's unbelievable. That's so forward thinking that a community like this believes so much in the power of the arts.
Well, that's awesome. That's great. And a true testament to what Carmel's been doing. And you guys continue to put on great seasons. Looking forward very much to this one, which is opening up right away. So this we're recording this for broadcast during Penrod, which is always Indiana's nicest day. But coming up next weekend, actually, is your opening of first show of the season, Always Patsy Cline, right?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
and it. So, Judy, you were just saying that this is actually kind of tied to Patsy Cline's birthday, right?
It is. It's actually September 8th is Patsy Cline's, would have been Patsy Cline's
been birthday.
81st birthday. And so we're opening on her birthday month on September 13th, running through the 29th. And, of course, everybody knows Patsy Cline. What a legend. And this is just a wonderful story of a true friendship between Louise Sager and Patsy Cline. And Louise met her at a concert prior to a concert in Houston and was a big fan and just struck up a conversation. And afterwards, Patsy had drinks with her and she convinced her to not stay in a hotel but come home and stay with her.
Huh.
And they made breakfast and Patsy put on her apron and they talked until 4 and then Louise took her to the airport.
That's so pretty. Now, do they ever get together back?
Their friendship lasts all the way they became friends. They they only talk about the letters in the play, but they actually had phone calls. Patsy would call her at like 1, 2 in the morning because she just needed to talk. And their friendship lasted until Patsy died in 1963.
So, and of course, Always Patsy Cline, not just a great story, but features some great, great music.
Yes,
right?
27 songs, in fact.
So Crazy and Walking After Midnight, which are, of course, to be expected.
I Fall to Pieces, Blue Moon of Kentucky, San Antonio Rose. Oh, my gosh, there are so
okay,
many.
Okay, let me throw an obscure one out there for you. And if it's not on the show, that's okay. Triangle?
No.
Do you know that song?
I hate to say I don't.
Oh, my, it is. Okay, next time you're listening to some Patsy Cline, find the song. It's all about a love triangle, but she plays the triangle in it. It's hysterical.
Really? Oh, my God.
It is the weirdest song. It's like, tra-la-la-la-la-la, triangle, and bing! You
know? Oh, my gosh, that should be in the show, because the show
great.
Is funny.
And then, like, the next line is, our love is such a tangle. I mean, it is an awesome song. Anyway, okay.
I'm writing it down.
Well, you know,
right
everybody is searching for triangle now. All the listeners, get out there. YouTube it quick.
Okay, so the more well-known Patsy Cline songs are
But still, but, she had so many, and she was just such a great artist. And one of the, she paved the way for crossover artists because there weren't any. She crossed from country to pop and could be, was on top of all those charts at once. And really died in the height of her career.
Just such a great talent and great music. And so this has got to be a fun show for you guys to do.
Yes, very fun.
We're very excited.
Yeah.
So tell me about, give me a little rundown of the rest of the season, because you've got a really interesting mix. I mean, not just the musicals, but you've also got the Odd Couple in there.
Yeah, we're really thrilled.
I know you're thrilled about this one, right?
Oh, my gosh. You kidding? Landmark musical, what am I saying? Landmark play, Neil Simon. Neil Simon, he writes so well. Mm-hmm. It just effortlessly comes right off the lips, the teeth, and the tongue. I mean, and, you know, a Tony Award-winning comic masterpiece. Everybody knows about The Odd Couple from, of course, the television show. But before, it was Broadway play.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Oscar and Felix. Actually, our executive director jokes with me in the office. He says, hey, you're Oscar and I'm Felix. Look at your desk and look at mine.
I mean, we have a stellar cast. I mean, just already lined up. Jeff Stockberger is going to direct the show, which I'm sure many of
you
listening.
Oh, he's a comic genius.
Oh, it's just going to be so great. And Dave Ruark, Adam Crow.
Oh, awesome.
Of course, Don Farrell, who's speaking with us today. Bradley
Typecasting
Reynolds.
Bradley Reynolds, we're thrilled
Katie Gentry. I'm trying to remember all of our folks, but it's going to be, I'm laughing already just thinking. I can't wait to just watch it. I'm so excited.
That'll be great.
Yeah.
What a hoot. And it is. It's such a good, strong play, and the writing holds up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Jeff really believes in keeping it true to the period. So you're going to be stepping back in time to the 1970s when the play was, when it takes place.
Right.
Because a lot of the, a lot of the jokes are centered around a lot of the, technology these days. You just pick up the cell phone, he was saying.
Right. Yeah.
But now you got to call him. Where's Felix? Right. Where's Felix? We're thrilled about that. That's going to be November 1st through the 17th in the studio theater.
And then around the holidays, you're doing Bringing Back.
Yay! We are bringing them back!
Bringing back the Toad.
We're bringing back A Year with Frog and Toad. And we're so
thrilled. This is sort of your traditional holiday show,
It is, but it'll be so exciting to just, we did it at Pike, and here's a 72-foot proscenium stage. And
wonderful stage.
Oh,
beautiful, wonderful
huge.
Time there.
So all our sets are for that, but now here we are in the 200-seat,
very intimate
thrust stage that we'll be doing it on, and it'll be so cool to reinvent it all
that'd
in
be
that
awesome.
Way and just to be able to really, because you really feel like you're a part of the show in that space. So I think it'll be really magical for the children and for the adults. I mean, everybody.
Loves
Frog and Toad.
The holiday tradition continues, and we're taking it to Carmel. We're really thrilled about it. I mean, that's just a great show. The music is so great, and it's not like just for children. I mean, like Judy was saying, it's very much kind of, I think actually Cindy's mom or sister attributed it to a Disney film, where I take my daughter to Disney films, and I get as just much out of it as she does.
Yeah.
And so same thing for the adults.
Yeah,
it's very inventive,
but it isn't like as Lou Harry said, it's not like Disney on Ice by any means. It's it's very heartfelt and a really important lesson, I think, for kids about friendship and how people can be different. And it's great. Diversity is wonderful. And it just has a I get chills even talking about it because it just has
that's really,
really
cool.
Special place.
And it's great.
I
mean, because I mean, you've done it before, but it's great you guys get still so excited about it.
We get so excited. And you know what? Our patrons get excited about it, too. I was up at Carmel Fest and also other patrons saying, when are you bringing that show back? Because we did not do it last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of people asking, when we mentioned about Frog and Toad, people just light up. So it's a great way for a different way of people to start their holiday season.
Nice.
So.
And then the two other shows you got in your regular season, Forever Plaid and then Irving Berlin's I Love a Piano. So Forever Plaid, great, fun show.
Yep.
Great music.
Yep. And it's the first time I'm going to be stepping out of that one. That's going to be it's going to be tough for me to step out.
Because you've
kind
done
of,
this one before.
I was forever in Forever Plaid.
Okay.
Did it in Las Vegas, directed national tours of it, directed in New York City after the original production closed. And
learned it. Did you say you learned it? He learned it from what, Larry Raven, but also
Guy Strowman, David Engel, Stuart Ross, all the originals who created the show.
That's so cool.
So it's going to be nice to pass the baton.
So what are you going to be doing? You're going to be on the
sidelines? I'm going to direct and choreograph, and I'm passing the baton over to a younger generation of plaids. And they're going to learn the real, and join the fraternity. So we're going to be really thrilled about that.
Nice.
And that'll be January 31st to February 16th.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're closing our season up with Irving Berlin's I Love a Piano, and that's going to be April 25th to May 11th. And that's just, you know, Irving Berlin. It's just a great American songbook. He wrote so many songs and through so many different generations and such, you know, you keep going, oh my gosh, he wrote that? He wrote that one too? He wrote that one? It's a wonderful way to end the season.
It's the big singing, dancing, and we have Carol Worsell and Kenny Shepherd are going to put that together for us, so that'll be just fantastic.
Amazing, talented team. Yeah.
So let me ask you about something that you've got coming up fairly soon, though. Sutton Foster. Some people know that name. Some people are going, I don't know what you're talking about. So who is Sutton Foster?
Sutton Foster is one of the she's like the hottest Broadway star today. I mean, mm-hmm. They were saying, is there anything she cannot do? She was the star of the ABC Family's Bunheads. She's done like, 10 different Broadway shows. She's won two Tony Awards. Her first Tony was for Thoroughly Modern Millie. Mm-hmm. And that's a Cinderella story, how that came about, too, because she was originally in the ensemble understudy. And so she ended up going on when they were working it out in La Jolla.
Story.
And then comes to New York and she wins the Tony Award.
Mm-hmm.
And,
but deservedly so. You know, she's a true triple threat. She really is.
She can do anything.
So she's coming in for a fundraiser for you guys?
We're presenting her on October 5th at the Palladium.
Okay.
And, it's funny how Judy and Cindy and I, the three founders of ATI, we still keep our professional lives busy going on outside of Carmel and outside of Central Indiana. And two summers ago, I was working with on a production of I Love You, Perfect, Not Change, and I worked with Michael Rafter, who is Sutton Foster's music director. He directed Thoroughly Modern Millie. He's done countless Broadway shows, and we struck up a friendship when I was working with him and he was music directing. And I mentioned we were doing last year's season, we opened with Gypsy, and Judy was in that. It was a great production. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, that seems to be a show I know a little something about. And I was like, really? And he goes, yeah, I won the Emmy for music directing Bette Midler in her TV version of it. He also music directed and conducted the Tyne Daly version as well. He's just done so many different things. So as we were chatting and had dinner one time, he said, you know, Sutton Foster and I are doing, we're going around the nation right now and doing her show, An Evening with Sutton Foster.
And it's sort of like a cabaret style, right?
Cabaret style, and a piano.
It'll feel intimate, but in a very, very big space.
That's awesome.
Yes, it's terrific.
So through he connected me with Sutton, and Sutton also with her connections with Ball State University, because she's adjunct faculty there, and she received her honorary doctorate as well, and she's working with them. And so it just kind of becomes kismet. And so we're really grateful that we have such great friends, and we have the ability to be able to present somebody.
Now, how can people get tickets for this?
Calling the Center for the Performing Arts box office, 843-3800.
That's tickets for Sutton and for our season. Why don't you tell them, Kristen?
And for our individual tickets as well.
Okay.
Yes, they can also go to our website, www.actresstheaterofindiana.org, and get all the information there on our season and on Sutton.
Very good. Very good. Yeah, that's going to be very cool to
And we're also bringing another component. Sorry to interrupt. That the students of Ball State had this really interesting project called Circus in Winter. Mm-hmm.
Kathy Day. She's been on our show many, many times.
So that's wonderful. So
Art of the Matter is a big fan of Kathy.
So we're going to put, there's going to be a little bit of that in Sutton's show.
Really?
We're talking about
that's such a cool piece that they've created. Yeah. And just some background very quickly for listeners who may not be aware. So Kathy Day, who now teaches at Ball State, wrote the book Circus in Winter, which has been turned into a musical by students at Ball State, though it actually coincidentally didn't quite have anything to do with her being an English teacher there. It was just kind of a thing that kind of evolved, but it's a very neat thing. It's great to see how that has progressed as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, and, you know, this cool is piece. Directly in line with ATI's mission of us presenting programs and performances that encourage education as well as future musicals, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a wonderful opportunity for us to be able to shed some light on some amazing work being done by students as well as Sutton Foster.
Cool.
So it's a win-win-win, we like to call it.
Excellent.
Yeah, we're very excited about all the possibilities and the great partnership we have with Ball
State.
A lot
of good stuff coming up for you guys this year.
And I think I think we kind of like to do just not just that we like everything. So I think that this year we're getting to do more there than we've ever done. This is our first production at the Palladium, which is very exciting. Very. So then we're starting to spread
our wings. Normally you're
a
in the
bit.
Studio theater.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So it's, I think that just for us to be able to do so many things, we're excited about the challenge. You know, mm-hmm. and the increase of productions.
Excellent.
And you'll hear about other exciting things that we have in the lines. We're just not ready to talk about them yet.
But
there's always something moving and shaking with ATI.
I will stay tuned. Well, Kristen, Judy, Dawn, thank you so much for coming in to Art of the Matter, and really appreciate your time and what you guys are doing, and have a great season.
Thanks so much. You too, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with Kristen Merritt, Judy Fitzgerald, and Dawn Farrell from the Actors Theater of Indiana. To find out more about ATI, visit actorstheaterofindiana.org, and theater is spelled with an R-E at the end. Again, actorstheaterofindiana.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll find out about the Playing for Change Music Festival.
I'll find out about Sunset Boulevard, opening soon at Footlight Musicals.
And we'll have that calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.